cities. Good morning, pet appreciators, and welcome to the Pet Connection Show here on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Kathy Menard here, your host, and our wonderful co-host, Dr. Nicole Peralta, is off today and hopefully having a nice, relaxing weekend. Actually, I heard through the grapevine that she hurt her back, so I will definitely give her a follow-up call and make sure she is doing okay. And I know that we all send good wishes to her. So hopefully she's feeling much better. But pet appreciators, another cold one here today. But that's very fitting for our topic. A couple weeks now, we're going to have, a couple weeks from now, the John Bear Grease Sled Dog Marathon will be happening again. Very, very exciting time up in northern Minnesota, the Duluth area. And every year we have the most wonderful person from that association up there, Jason Rice, with us to talk about it, learn about it, and I'm so excited to have him on again. Jason is calling from the Duluth area, and I want to welcome you, a very warm welcome, Jason, to the Pet Connection Show again.
Hey, thank you, Kathy. Good to be here.
Sure. How are you? It's been a year.
It has. We shouldn't make it so long in between chats, shall we?
No, I know. And I tell you, I get so excited. I tell everybody that you're going to be on because you're somebody that I learn from. It doesn't matter how many times you've been on. I think this is your fifth or sixth time. But I learn something every single time, and I'm like hungry for it. I'm excited. But just before we get into some of the questions that I have, I just think the history of the John Bear Grease Sled Dog Marathon is just phenomenal. And it's very touching and moving, I think, as well. And you do the best explanation of that. And so can we just start with a little bit of the history?
Well, first of all, you're way, way, way too kind and generous with your description of me. So I thank you for that. The history of John Bear Grease. So in the late 1800s and early 1900s, John Bear Grease, who was a member of the Grand Portage Band of Lake Superior, Chippewa, was also a United States mail carrier. And during the summer months, he would use horses. He would deliver mail on horseback all up and down the north shore of Lake Superior. His route basically went from Grand Portage, Minnesota, down to two harbors, following a path that he and his brothers basically had created along with other locals along the way. And sometimes even by boat, he would deliver mail in the summer, spring, summer, maybe into the fall months. But in the wintertime, the most reliable way to haul packages and messages was with his dog sled team. And it wasn't a big team of dogs. From what we know historically, he typically used anywhere between 5 and 9 dogs at the most. But he made that journey sometimes a couple of times a week, from Grand Portage down to Two Harbors and back on up to Grand Portage, stopping in all of the towns and villages and settlements along the way. He was the earliest version of, social media. He was, around the turn of the century, late 1800s, early 1900s, he was the internet, he was the newspaper, the radio, the television, the blogs, and social media all in one. He is what kept people who had chosen to settle here connected with the outside world.
That's a very good description. And especially for our younger listeners, I mean, that just says it all. He was the connector.
Yeah, absolutely. Without John, and this is part of the reason why we feel it's so worthy to celebrate him, it really brought an extra dimension to the people who were brave enough to attempt to settle in this area that didn't have all the amenities that we now enjoy.
Right, right. And, you know, I was wondering, this year, one of the things that I just really like about the Sled Dog Marathon, John Bear Grease Sled Dog Marathon, is that there's something for everybody. You know, there's the main race, which we can get into, but then there's all kinds of, like, junior races, cub races, recreational races. There's all kinds of things going on, and I'm wondering if you can touch base a little bit on that.
Sure. So all of the nuts and bolts, so to speak, everything really kind of begins a week in advance. Next weekend, on Saturday the 20th of January, we have two events going on. They go on, unfortunately, they kind of overlap each other time-wise. But there's some cute stuff to see at either one. If you have to pick and choose, you know, choose your favorite and go on out there to it. But we have both the Cub Run, which is our really, really little kids' opportunity to mush. It's anywhere from a mile to 2 miles in length, so it doesn't take them very long. And we've got volunteers who are standing by along the trail, that 2 mile path, the entire way. So if something goes wrong, the kids, the number one, they're only using two dogs, so they're not using an overpowering team. But they go quite fast, even just with two dogs. Then,
Jason,
they make one big loop and come right back to the start.
Sorry to interrupt. Are these dogs provided for them then? So all the equipment and stuff is provided for them?
No, unfortunately, we don't have a program that enables us to do that. So these are kids who made arrangements with someone who does have dogs and equipment.
Okay.
So now there are plenty of people, though, who fall into that category who are willing to help and train and show up-and-coming kids who just have an interest in it, show them what it's all about. So that being said, the other event that's going on that day is probably one of the events that everybody just wants to go attend, and that's the cutest puppy contest that's held at Fitgers in downtown Duluth. So that's puppies anywhere from 4 to 9 months of age, and they've got to have proof of vaccination, and they have to have some sort of proof of age. So you can't just bring any dog to that, just so people are aware. But it is a very cool event, even with that small window that we allow for the puppy contest. There are still anywhere from 40 to 50, 60 puppies that wind up coming to compete for that title.
Oh, that's adorable. That is just adorable. And it's one of the fun things that you bring up every year, because I know that's been a big part of the family component of the sort of marathon weekend or whatever. But no, that's great.
Yeah. And so that's next weekend.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be next weekend, Saturday the 20th. Then the weekend after is when we get into the real crush of activity. That's the race weekend. So beginning Friday, January 26th. We will have our first ever beer grease. Yes, you heard me correctly. The beer grease event, which is just kind of a fun, relaxing social event where race officials and mushers and media members and the public can all get together, hang out, ask very candid questions, and get to know the human side of each other. And at the same time, this is going to be held at the, by the way, this is a really cool location. It's going to be held at the historic Congdon Mansion.
Oh, wow.
So we'll be doing a ceremonial tapping of the keg with Canal Park Brewing Company, a local brewer here in Duluth, and we'll get to sample a special brew that they are bringing in honor of John Bear Grease. And it's just sort of the beginning to all the activity. Then, of course, Saturday morning, things really get rolling. Saturday morning, the 27th. Vet checks begin at 8 a.m. In the town of Beaver Bay. And you can't miss it because it's right there on Highway 61. And you'll see dog trucks everywhere at two different locations right there in the heart of Beaver Bay going up the North Shore. Every single dog that is running, whether it's in the mid-distance or in the junior race or in the full marathon, 400 miles, every dog gets thoroughly inspected and gets a very thorough examination by our veterinary staff. They have to be cleared in order to run the race. We do not want to put dogs in any sort of a dangerous situation. So every dog gets an extremely thorough examination before hitting the trail.
All right. And I would assume the junior race, well, does the junior race and the recreational race and the mid-distance race, do they start on Saturday, or does everything start on Sunday, the 28th?
Sunday the 28th is when the racing begins. So don't confuse the junior race with the Cub Run. The Cub Run is next weekend, and I realize we're talking a lot of very similar names there. But the junior race actually follows the exact same path this year as the mid-distance. So right now I believe we have five kids who are in their teens, anywhere from 13 to 16 right now, of age, who will be running that same 120-mile distance with their dogs that that the adult mid-distance teams will run. So that's the junior. The recreational race just goes one leg. It's still about a 40-mile run, but it's from the Two Harbors starting point up to the Finland, the town of Finland checkpoint.
Okay.
And again, all of those begin on the morning of Sunday, January 28th in Two Harbors.
In Two Harbors. And just, you know, just because I haven't seen the start of the race, you know, myself in person, so I'm assuming these races are staggered, but do the is the main race the one that you get off first, just so, you know, whatever was prepped for the trails and that kind of thing is in the best condition for them, or how does that work?
Well, it does go that way, that the marathoners, the ones with the big team, the 14-dog teams, they are going to be heading out first. The reason for that is usually not so that the trail is in the, you know, the prime condition for them, because the trail, the dogs really don't mess a good packed, this is a, we run on the state snowmobile trail, so it's packed and groomed quite nicely. So having dogs out there doesn't typically degrade the trail the more dog teams that come by. The reason for sending those big teams out first is so that as they're running with a bigger, powerful, more powerful team of dogs, and obviously a lot longer string, probably 50 feet out in front of them.
Right. And Jason, I didn't realize that we're coming up against a commercial break. I wasn't looking at the computer. I'm sorry. I'm just so busy listening to you.
I'll continue on.
Absolutely. Thank you, Jason. Stay with us, Pet Appreciators.
One Voice Mixed Chorus, Minnesota's LGBTA chorus, returns to the Ordway Concert Hall for Sanctuary, an unforgettable evening of choral music celebrating the music of immigrants who make Minnesota home, including Scandinavian, German, Irish, Mexican, Hmong, and Somali. One Voice will also perform You Will Be Found for Broadway's Dear Evan Hansen and I Come From Good People. That's at the Ordway Concert Hall Friday, January 19th and Sunday, January 21st. Call 651-224-4222 or check out onevoicemn.org for tickets today.
Supporting the best local and independently owned restaurants in the Twin Cities has never been easier. You'll find an expansive list of local dining options at eatlocalminnesota.com, from classic American comfort food to authentic flavors from around the world. Crooner's Lounge and Supper Club invites you to check out their beautiful facilities for your next special occasion. Book your wedding reception, retirement party, business dinner, or other special event with confidence, knowing their expert staff and award-winning chef will make it a big hit with your guests. Call today to get a quote, 763-571-9020. STEM offers exquisite and exciting wines from around the world, served in a beautiful space showcasing a culmination of old world and new. While wine is their focus, STEM also has artisan beer, seasonal cocktails, and delicious rotating small plates. STEM is located at 24 University Avenue in Northeast Minneapolis. Learn more at stemminneapolis.com.
Hi, this is Laura with Food Freedom Radio.
And I'm Karen. Join us every Saturday at 8 a.m. It's all about food, you know, Laura.
Right, the health of the planet. You know, carbon-based farming can solve the climate crisis.
Well, because community is medicine.
And it's not about one seed to rule them all anymore.
One seed rules the world.
Yeah, let's have something else. Let's, like, worry about our individual health, our community health, the health of the planet, while eating food.
Yeah, because it's all tied to food.
So listen to Food Freedom Radio every Saturday at 8 a.m.
on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
While shopping for a fireplace insert at Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces, I was amazed at all the choices. Not just gas, electric, or wood burning, but also built-in or freestanding, and options in every style from antique to modern. The staff really listened to us, explained the options, and helped us choose a fireplace we absolutely love. Now it warms our hearts and our home every winter. Thank you, Woodland Stoves, for a great addition.
Hi, I'm Peter Solak, putting in a word for the EPA Burn Wise campaign. It has important information about clean burning fireplaces. This is an important part of our mission at Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces. We know that the fireplace has to work. Work with your life, work with your living space, and also be environmentally smart. Come see us. Learn to burn wise. We have over 35 working units on display at the corner of Riverside and East Franklin Avenue in Minneapolis. Visit our store in person or online at woodlandstoves.com.
Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces, out of the ordinary products and services since 1977.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Pet Connection Show here on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Kathy Menard here, your host, and our wonderful guest, Jason Rice, who is representing the John Bear Grease Sled Dog Marathon again. I know you're on the board of directors as well there, and that you're very, very, very involved. So Jason is a wealth of information about this wonderful marathon. And we were just talking before the break. Just the order that the races will go in. You know, we have the big race, the main race, and the people who are participate in the mid-distance. There's a group of people that do it just recreationally, and then there's the junior race. So we were just talking about what happens, you know, who goes out first and what the trails are like, et cetera. And so, Jason, I'll just let you take over where you left off.
Oh, sure. And thanks once again for your kind words and having me on for either fifth or sixth, we're not sure which, year in a row. So on Sunday, the 28th, just 2 weeks from today, we will be launching the longest sled dog marathon in the lower 48 states, the 400-mile John Bear Grease Sled Dog Marathon. But as you mentioned, there are those other races going on that begin that same day, begin at the same place, at the trailhead, about 9 miles north of Two Harbors. So the marathoners obviously grab all the attention. They go the long distance. They've got the big, beautiful dog teams, very powerful, 14 dogs. And we send them out first because with a string of dogs that long in front of you, and we're talking 50 to 60 feet when they're hooked up on that gang line out in front of the sled, if there's any sort of an issue or any sort of, if they're passing, for instance, if there's a lot of passing, some of the younger and less experienced mushers are not necessarily used to passing or being passed by another dog team. And what we like to make sure is that people have as few complications on the trail as possible. The best way we know to do that is to put those big experienced teams with a big long string of dogs in front of them. Let's put them out first, so that they're out ahead of some of the less experienced teams. And that way we have less chance of having a long string of dogs get tangled up accidentally with a smaller string of dogs who might not know how to handle it or how to approach the situation. So the mid-distance teams, that probably begs the question, well, how many dogs do the mid-distance teams run? They're running with a maximum of 8 dogs. They have to have a minimum of 6 dogs to start. But most of them will show up with the maximum allowable 8 dogs. And keep in mind, a sled dog, the average sled dog is probably 35 to 40 pounds these days. And while that sounds really small, and you think of Balto, and you think of all of those famed stories of Iditarod dogs, and you think big huskies, well, think again. These days, they're really fit, trim, very small in stature, surprisingly small in stature to many people, and they can pull 10 times their own body weight. So those 8 dogs actually will run the 120-mile mid-distance race, leaving on Sunday approximately noon for the mid-distance, and they will reach the finish line 120 miles later up the shore and to the Gunflint Trail. They will do that and finish in less than 20 hours, we will have a winning team across. So think about it. They're going to sleep for 8 hours in the middle. They're going to be averaging probably about 11 over the course of their whole 120 miles. They'll average about 11 or 12 miles an hour. And we'll have a winner in the early morning hours of Monday, the 29th. It's pretty amazing, isn't it?
It is very amazing. And when you were talking about just how fit and trim those dogs are, and not all of them are huskies either. There's other breeds that are used as well. Is that correct?
That's correct. So keep in mind that it's very rare to see purebred husky teams these days running distance races. There are a couple of kennels, and this is absolutely, I want to give them credit. There are some people just who have raised and trained purebred Siberians for a long time and have done very well in that process. It's very rare, though, that you see purebred teams these days. When you talk about huskies, or Alaskan husky is the term that's most commonly used to describe sled dogs. And Alaskan husky, that's just a term the way it was described to me years ago. An Alaskan Husky is just a big furry dog that don't mind the cold, eats well on the run, and likes to pull. So over the years, the Alaskan Husky, or what you would call an Alaskan Husky, has really kept evolving. It's probably, arguably, the most evolving breed in the world, because it's continually having breeding done for the purposes of those qualities that I mentioned. You want a dog that you want to breed for characteristics like a good appetite, a lack of proneness to injuries of wrists and so forth. So the characteristics that they're breeding for are very specific, and sometimes it's an interesting mix of dogs that helps get you there. Some of the blood that's very typical to see is a mixture of, in the bloodlines of these Alaskan Huskies, you'll see some Malamute, you'll probably find some Siberian, you'll find some various hound breeds mixed in, and a very popular one for a long time due to the athleticism and just the brain of this dog was the German Shorthaired Pointer. The German Shorthaired Pointer started getting crossed with Husky mixes. It's probably been going on for a long time, but it really gained popularity and gained a lot of momentum in the mushing world in the 90s and early 2000s. The German Shorthaired Pointer blood is all over the place now, mixed into sled dog teams. And one of the biggest reasons for that, the German Shorthaired Pointer in particular, has a very quick heart rate recovery. And that's important because when mushers have gone 50, 60 miles and they've reached the next checkpoint, from one checkpoint leaving to getting into the next checkpoint, maybe 5 or 6 hours later, and again, 50 or 60 miles, you want a dog that has a heart rate that's able to slow down and allow them to truly fall into a rest cycle. What they found through studies was that the typical Alaskan Husky, prior to introducing some of these other bloodlines, really took 45 minutes to an hour before it could go from running, let's equate you and I running a marathon. Our heart rate is way up there at our full training rate, and it takes a while to come down to a resting heart rate. Rest is super, super important. Along with nutrition, rest is equally as important for those dogs. And the quicker the dog's body can get into a resting rhythm, the quicker the process of rejuvenation, recovery, can happen, and so that dog can really get a truly good rest at a checkpoint. So they bred for that. They found that German Shorthaired Pointers could be a half an hour or sometimes less to get into that resting. So if you could cut your time, that lag time, in half, that's an extra half an hour of quality rest at each checkpoint. You add that up over the 4 days of the Bear Grief Sled Dog Marathon, 400 miles, that's probably anywhere from 4 to 8 hours of additional rest that dog is getting because of its ability for the heart rate to calm down to a resting rhythm.
That's amazing. I would have never thought that. And, well, obviously, because I'm not that experienced with it, but it is amazing. Pet appreciators, stay with us. Jason will stay with us as well. We'll continue this wonderful conversation after the commercial break.
Now on display at the Museum of Russian Art is an exhibition of beautiful icons and sacred art from the 19th century called Russian Sacred Art, Connecting Heaven and Earth. Liturgical music from the best Russian choirs gently accompanies your experience of these pillars of spiritual life. Open daily and with free parking, Timora is the easiest museum to get to in Minneapolis, so plan your visit today at tmora.org. That is tmora.org.
Hi, this is Ken Hagelin, president of Minnesota Hospice, inviting you to listen to our new show airing on AM 950 on Saturdays from noon to 1. Our team from Minnesota Hospice will be discussing Care for the Caregiver, where we share recommendations to keep the caregiver healthy while caring for their loved one. Please join us Saturday from noon to 1 for the new Minnesota Hospice show and learn more about us online at minnesotahospice.com.
People love the warmth, charm, and great food at Milton's 36 and Douglas in Crystal. Tonight, try their Vittles, Vino, and Beer, a full slab of baby back ribs grilled over mesquite charcoal, juicy jerk chicken with Caribbean beans and rice, grilled plank salmon, and their famous shrimp and grits. Try a Milton's ribeye or the portobello mushroom and end your night with carrot cake, bananas foster, or rum cake. The perfect meal for a date or a casual get-together. That's Vittles, Vino, and Beer at Milton's 36 and Douglas in Crystal.
Hi, I'm Dr. Scott Chambaud from Chambaud Family Dentistry. We're the fear-free, get-you-out-of-pain-now dental office. We always offer a free exam and x-rays for new patients because we believe you shouldn't have to pay to find out what's wrong with your teeth. Call today. We're open early and late and Saturdays to fit your schedule. As my daughter Rachel says,
if you don't see my dad, please see another dentist. Take care of your teeth because they're the only ones you get. Call 1-800-FIX-MY-TEETH or visit fixmyteeth.us.
Seward Co-op, serving the community for nearly 45 years, invites you to shop their two convenient locations, both offering the strong commitment to local producers and healthy foods you've come to expect. Seward focuses on locally grown and raised products, fair trade, and environmental sustainability. Shop their selection of meats, artisan cheeses, and house-made baked goods. Find Seward at 2823 East Franklin Avenue or the Friendship Store on 38th Street and 3rd Avenue in Minneapolis. More at seward.coop. OP.
Oh no, you shattered your cell phone. Now what? Listen closely. We know you're lost without your phone. Bring it to Computer Revolution today. We'll fix it and have you back online before someone asks, "Where are you?" Computer Revolution with Cell Phone Repair has over 18 years experience fixing computer devices, all brands, all carriers. Computer Revolution with Cell Phone Repair, located in Roseville at Highway 36 and Fairview Avenue, or call 651-633-6600. We fix phones. Same day, 7 days a week.
With your AM 950 weather, this is Eric Nelson. Today, highs near 15, with wind chills as low as negative 15. Expect 1 to 2 inches of snow today. Tonight, lows around negative 4, with wind chills as low as negative 19. Tomorrow will be cold and sunny, with highs near 0.
Don't miss the Home Improvement and Design Expo this Saturday at Canterbury Park in Shakopee. See up to 150 home improvement experts. The Home Improvement and Design Expo this Saturday only at Canterbury Park. It's the smart place to start your home improvement project. See it all at expoguys.com. That's expoguys.com.
Welcome back, Pet Appreciators. Welcome back to the Pet Connection Show here on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. We're going to get right back into our conversation with Jason. Again, I'm learning so much, Jason. I've been taking notes on what I learned this particular time. But anyways, at these checkpoints, Jason, what happens at these checkpoints? I know we were talking about how, you know the heart rate of some of the dogs, especially the German pointers, et cetera, can calm down much quicker and get into a rest. But what actually happens physically at these checkpoints? How many people are there to help? Are there people there to help? How does food get delivered in? Tents? I mean, do they carry all that on the sleds? What happens there?
So at the checkpoints, are a flurry of activity and volunteers. There are people to help all along the way. And one of the things that makes our race unique from some of the other really long races is that we do allow handler help. So let's talk about that. You're a musher, you're on the dog sled, and you're making your way up the North Shore on the North Shore State Trail. And after leaving the start in Two Harbors, 40 miles later, in about 3.5 hours, you wind up at the town of Finland. And there's a checkpoint there. The trail leads right into the checkpoint. Your handlers have driven your truck or your, in some cases, it's a modified trailer or a modified camper and has brought all of your supplies. And usually they have a spot picked out and a place already laid out for the dogs to lay down. They put straw down on the ground, and the dogs are not allowed to be put back into the vehicle. However, they make things very comfortable for them by having a really nice bed of straw. And, of course, the breeds that are running in races like this are very accustomed to cold weather. So while they sleep, if it's cold like it has been these past few days, they'll actually put wool coats or sometimes down blankets over the dogs as they lay on the straw and let them sleep, and they do real well. They also have to eat. That's one of the first things that they're going to want to do when they come in. They know that one of the rewards for working so hard is a great hot meal, and people have seen the varied types of stew at one point or another. If you've been around us, been around sled dogs at all, that stew or gruel or slop, whatever you want to call it, is really quite, it doesn't look like anything specific, but trust me when I tell you, every single thing in there is very intentionally put in there. So it might look a little bit disgusting to us humans, but these dogs love it and they need it. It could have, typically it's going to be hot water poured over any sort of combination of raw meat. Okay, so frozen chunks of meat are thrown in and they thaw out. The dogs love that. It could be anything from beef to chicken to fish. Mink. Mink is very popular with mushers, actually, because it's not real expensive and it has a very nice fat content to it. So they'll throw big chunks of meat in there and let it thaw out in the boiling water. And then there will be some kibble that's very specifically designed for the dog's dietary needs. It's going to be probably very high protein. And sometimes when the weather is really cold, you'll add another element in to into their soup. You will add in a really high fat content source. Something like chicken skins are real common. So just wads and wads of frozen chicken skins. It's got great fat content, but the reason for that being that fat is obviously converted into energy for the dogs, and they burn it off really quickly. If you don't give them enough fat during, particularly during cold weather, where their body's really kind of fighting two things, it's doing two things at once. It's number one, it's exercising and burning calories through that process, but it also is keeping you warm. So fat is one of the things that helps to do that. It's burnt and helped to generate heat inside the body. So you would perhaps find it surprising to know that the average sled dog running that whole 400-mile marathon will consume about 14,000 calories a day.
That's a lot. Okay.
14,000. Yeah. So if you did the math, like in human terms, how many Big Macs is that? That's like 25, 30 Big Macs a day. They'll do that every day, 14,000 calories.
And they still look terrific. But
because they're burning it really quick.
Yeah. Sounds like probably by the end of the day. And then did you mention at all the medical part? And I'm just kind of going there in my mind a few times here during the conversation because I don't know. I know it's been really cold up there for you guys. And I know that, you know, everybody's adjusted to it and you know, every precaution is taken, et cetera. But are you expecting super below zero weather up there? And will there just be more, are there vets at every checkpoint then?
Absolutely. So veterinary care is absolutely, if we didn't have a vet team, we would not have a race. There would just be no credibility to it. You have to ensure that despite the mushers being quite well-versed in how to care for their dogs and knowing their capabilities, we have to just make sure that we provide that safety net, that no dog is being ignored and that the conditions are taken into account, whether it's cold or whether it's icy. Icy and warm conditions are bad, too. That's very slippery. If you imagined if you were running a marathon and your feet were slipping partway back on every stride, imagine the extra strain on the ligaments and the joints in your ankles. And that's going to work its way up your leg to knee problems and hip problems. Everything connects. So we have the vet team spread out. There are 17 veterinarians, and there's typically a total vet team of about 20 or 25, all currently licensed and practicing in veterinary medicine. Our chief vet, by the way, is Dr. Greg Phillips from the North St. Paul Animal Hospital. And he's been our chief vet now, I think, for this would be his fourth year. Fantastic man. And he and the staff make sure that every single dog gets the attention it needs. And at every checkpoint, dogs are being looked at. And the vet team has the complete autonomous control. If they say that this dog really needs to stop now, the musher has no choice. That dog will get to ride in the dog truck the rest of the race, and it will not be asked to mush whatsoever. So once a dog, it's called dropping a dog. So when you drop a dog from your team, by Bear Grease rules, you are not allowed to put that dog back into harness for the rest of the race. That dog, its race is done at that point, so that we care for its best interests.
Excellent. Yeah. And are there replacement dogs at all? I don't know if that's kind of a naive question or not. Like, how would you get this replacement dog, you know, halfway through the race?
You do not get a replacement dog.
Okay.
You do not get a replacement dog. So that means dog care. That's another way of keeping mushers accountable and not allowing them to run their team faster or harder or ask more of them than what they're able to naturally do. We do drug testing. And the dogs, so you start the race in the marathon with a maximum of 14 dogs in your team. As a dog either has a sore wrist and you leave it behind at a checkpoint, now you're down to 13. And as the race goes on, a few hundred miles, pretty much every team will have one or two dogs at least that just were not keeping up or not having fun. They watch for the mental attitude, too. The musher does. They don't want a dog to not be having fun. It will slow up the process, and it just becomes more of a burden. So they know that that one dog in particular is an excellent dog for keeping up a good pace for about 200 miles, and that's as far as he or she is going to go. And so they strategically know that once I reach that 200-mile point at that checkpoint, that dog is going to be taken out of the team, but it's a great contributor up to that point. So there's various. That's more of a strategic thing. But the dogs are definitely you have to care for them. You have to keep the wheels on the truck, right?
Exactly.
Each one of those dogs it's your horsepower and your wheels at the same time. It's the engine and the wheels, and you don't want to lose those as you get lower in number on dogs. Obviously, your speed decreases, your power decreases. So it's really in the musher's best interest, and they know it, to really focus on dog care.
Right, right. No, just excellent point. You also brought up drug testing, and I'm not sure what that is about. I do know, and I don't know how much knowledge you have of it, but it was in the news, what, maybe 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 months ago, maybe, with the Iditarod, that there was some sort of drug test, what was it, Jason?
Yeah,
I didn't follow it that much.
That was done on Dallas Seavey's dogs, in which a dog tested positive, and Dallas, of course, is famous for having won the Iditarod multiple times, as well as his father, Mitch. That's still a great debate in Alaska, and I'll stay out of the debate portion about it because one of the things that it was really brought into question there was the veracity of the drug test, the veracity of the situation. So as I understood it, and knowing people involved in that race as well, I just know that there's a period of time where the dogs after the race were left unattended, in other words, not observed by either race officials or CV's team. And there was some debate as to whether someone who wished to sully his name could have given a dog or two a treat that had something in it, knowing that his dogs would be tested. Since he came in, he finished very, very high in the race. I believe he finished second in the Iditarod to his father last year. There was a good likelihood that his dogs would be tested, and there was some belief from the CV camp that someone may have fed his dogs something that would have caused them to fail the drug test. Personally, I don't believe that with his level of experience in mushing and with his success and having run this race and won it multiple times and tested clean all of those times, it certainly wouldn't make sense that all of a sudden he would switch his strategy to be doing something unethical or illegal.
Right. No, I agree with that. And then, getting back to the to this race here, John Bear Grease, are there like enough, is there enough like physical space between these camps? Because I'm assuming, you know, the ones that get out first, I mean, eventually you're all sort of spread out. I can't imagine that everybody's really close during the whole race. But, you know, when people are sleeping and that kind of thing, I can, you know, I'm just wondering, is there enough physical space that, you know, if the musher is talking with other team members or whatever, that there's enough privacy and, you know, that kind of thing? It's kind of a silly question, but I do wonder about that, you know?
Just, sure. So at a checkpoint, it's space is based kind of on a first come, first serve as far as picking a corner. You're looking for your handlers are arriving there well in advance of the musher.
And
so
Jason,
the handlers are pulling the truck where they're going to.
Right, and I'm going to interrupt you again because I keep forgetting to look at the clock. I'm just so into what you're saying. Okay, and taking notes. Stay with us, Pet Appreciators. Jason will address that after the break.
Hi, friends. I've been talking to you about Minnesota's first green cemetery, Prairie Oaks Memorial Eco Gardens. It's an entirely new way of looking at our last earthly step. Burials are designed to have as little impact on the environment as possible, for many of us, a continuation of the commitment we made during our lifetimes. Let me suggest you go to the website, mngreengraves.com. Explore what it is. Prairie Oaks Memorial Eco Gardens. It's a lovely place, a peaceful place. Minnesota's first green cemetery.
Located just north of 50th and France, the Great Wall Restaurant has provided a delicious taste of authentic Chinese cuisine since 1981. Specializing in Sichuan and Peking dishes, they offer one of the most extensive menus in the Twin Cities. Favorites include hot and sour soup, pan-fried dumplings, and mushu pork with homemade Chinese pancakes. Stop by their Edina location or call for takeout at 952-927-4439. See the full menu at greatwallrestaurant.us.
Ho-Chunk Gaming Wisconsin, wherever you are and however you like it, we're just the place you're looking for. Six unique, fun, exciting, winning destinations located throughout central Wisconsin. Make your rounds to Wittenberg, Nakusa, Black River Falls, Toma, Madison, or Wisconsin Dells for the hottest slots, most exciting games, award-winning guest service, delicious food and spirits, lodging, and live entertainment. Join the Ho-Chunk Gaming Rewards Club for free. And with a single card, you can earn valuable points no matter which of the six locations you choose to play. That means more exclusive offers, giveaways, cash back, discounts, and much more. Visit us online to see all we have to offer and find the fun times nearest you at HoChunkGaming.com. So wherever you are and however you like it, we're just the place you're looking for. Ho-Chunk Gaming Wisconsin, Wittenberg, Nakusa, Black River Falls, Toma, Madison, and Wisconsin Dells.
Experience the difference. Ho-Chunk Gaming Wisconsin.
Must be 21 or over to play.
And the first sentence of his email said, "I'd like to stay anonymous." And the second sentence said, "I'd like to donate $1 million to the Global Good Fund. Where should I send the check?"
I'm Tony Lloyd, and I'm the host of the brand new show, Social Entrepreneur. If you love stories that engage, inform, and inspire, you don't want to miss it. Join us every Monday from 7 to 8 a.m. right here on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
I've discovered the true test of a vehicle is the road trip. This summer, I bought a new vehicle from Rudy Luther Toyota and immediately took it out on the road to DC and South Carolina. If you drive for 10 hours and you're not tired, that tells you a lot about Toyotas. When you're getting exceptional gas mileage with fewer stops, it tells you a lot about Toyotas. And when you feel safe, even when you're out of your comfort zone, that tells you a lot about Toyotas. It's my highest recommendation. Go to Rudy Luther Toyota and see for yourself at 394 and 169.
Thanks for staying with us, Pet Appreciators. And again, if you're just joining us, it's the Pet Connection Show here on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. So Jason, we went into the commercial break with you partially answering a question that I feel like, I don't know, is there anything more to add to it? I just felt like my question wasn't the most informative, if that makes sense.
Well, let me just kind of encapsulate it quickly. So when the teams do come into checkpoints, it really is the safety and security of the team in the checkpoint ultimately falls on that musher's handler team. So they need to be there to watch over the dogs as they sleep or as they eat, need to make sure that the dogs aren't getting loose, and running free. So the teams of or the volunteers at each checkpoint are there to assist, and of course the vets are there to check and ensure the health of each and every dog. But it is up to the musher and their handler team to keep control and keep the dogs. As far as how close are they to one another, that depends. It depends on which checkpoint you're at. Sometimes there's a really cool location off in a corner, where they feel that their dogs will get a nice quiet sleep for several hours, and more than one team might try to crowd into that corner. But as far as keeping a respectful distance, I think that the teams themselves really handle that.
All right. Okay. And then, you know, one thing that I'm amazed with every year, Jason, is the amount of women that participate in all levels. You know, girls in the cub and young women in the junior, and then of course the mid distance and the regular race. Is that a growing interest in women? Have you seen? I mean, I was just looking at one of the websites the other day, and it was listing all the musters. And I was like, woman, 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 you know, and I just think that that's neat in terms of this sport.
Yeah, there might be slightly more women than usual this year signed up for our race. I can't speak to all other races, but it is definitely, it might surprise you, it's not a new thing. Women actually have been doing extremely well and have been some of the top performing teams for many years. Let's look at Iditarod. Look at people like Libby Riddles and Susan Butcher and Dee Dee Jonro, just to name a few. Those ladies were in the sport when really men, they were kind of more the pioneers, as I see it, and people like Roxy Wright. These are women who were perhaps surrounded by mostly men where there were few women. Now I think the scales have kind of tipped. And I haven't done a scientific study on this, but it seems like year after year, there are at least as many, if not more, women participating in the Bear Grease than men. So it's not a new thing, although this year it is very heavily populated with women's teams. And if you look at the mid-distance, Martha Schoweiler from Wisconsin, she's won the past three mid-distances in a row. So she's going for a mid-distance record here with the Bear Grease. In fact, I think she already owns it. She's looking to expand on her record. So women have done very well, suffice it to say, for a long time in this sport. That's not a new thing for us.
I just think that's fantastic. And I don't know if you have any comments about this or not, but I just think it's a wonderful confidence builder, I just can't say enough about it. I'm just very impressed, and so I just wanted to bring that up.
My shortest soundbite of the day, Kathy. I agree. I think it is a fantastic confidence builder for anybody. It doesn't really matter what age or what gender you are. I think when you learn to be confident in a situation that is rife with not-so-confident situations. You know, you're in the woods, and you take a corner, and you're out there on your own, and you take a corner, and the sled dumps over. Number one, you've got to learn that's your only way back. You don't let go. So that's why you hear whenever you watch the sled dog movies, never let go. That's the number one rule. But to teach yourself what to do, if you have to fix gear, if you break your sled while you're out there, you're going to have to improvise. It's a very imperfect world. As my mushing mentor taught me, there's 100 different things can happen every time you go on a run with sled dogs, and 99 of them are probably not positive. So it's how you react to it. You know what to do. If a dog has an injured wrist or if a dog becomes sick, how do you handle that? It builds confidence when you learn exactly how you got through those situations.
Yeah, I just think it's fantastic. And can you touch on, we just have about 3 minutes left of the show, can you touch on the International Federation for Sled Dog Sports? What is that? I know you guys have their endorsement, but what is it? What do they do?
So the IFSS is actually like a sanctioning body, if you will, that that says this race, any race that is sanctioned by IFSS, actually has certain key components. So we have plenty of veterinary care, and veterinary care that it's not just veterinarians, it's veterinarians and staff who specifically know how to work with working dogs. Sled dog care is different because of the amount of activity the dog is doing and the type and nature of work that they're doing. So you've got to have the right veterinary protocol in place. You have to have the right race protocol in place as far as certain rules and regulations for the mushers. Obviously, drug policies, you know, not putting painkillers into a dog system so that it's able to run beyond its natural abilities. So it's more of a technicality, but it's races, to kind of sum it up, it's races that have been deemed to be the best of the best as far as professional protocols to ensure fairness and good dog care. How's that?
Excellent. And then just real quick here, we got about a minute and a half. A couple of years ago, I remember going to a certain website, and I was able to live, I was able to watch it live from that internet site, the race. And so I was able to check in and watch, you know, musher after musher take off, which was really exciting. Sitting down here in Minneapolis in between my dog walks and the different buildings that we have, et cetera, you know, just to check in. Do you have that option
Absolutely.
Available?
So that site, that's one of our supporters. That's actually ifan.tv, IFAN, I-F-A-N. And they will live stream the start as well as the finish, but then a number of points in the middle of the race as well. They drive and follow the race and set up cameras and live stream on the web. And we'll have links, if people don't remember that link, beargrease.com is obviously our website, and we will have direct links onto all of IFAN stuff. Plus, on the Bear Grease, you can track every musher and follow them surreptitiously via GPS tracking that we have mounted to their sled.
Way
so
cool.
There's all kinds of ways to follow from home.
All right. Thank you so much. We will bring this up again next week, and just best of luck. We're excited for everybody. And again, we'll talk it up next week. Take care, Pet Appreciators. Thank you so much for joining us on Sunday. And Jason, thank you.
Thank you.